Welcome, everybody, to the pre-episode of Rolling on Fate. We are just going to explain what the hell D&D is, and so that way you can just jump right into the story and not get bogged down by all the random rules and shit that happen.
D&D 101, you can play too! D&D is great because it combines the two things everyone hates doing and makes you do them. Math and improv.
I was going to say communication and small group management.
That too.
I'm Matt, the DM.
I'm Jen, a player.
I'm Beth, also a player.
And I'm Kit. I also play in this D&D campaign.
D&D is just sort of our way to tell the story. It's sort of the mechanics, and it helps us with our decision making and how to build the characters and such.
Yeah, I always sort of think about D&D as just a loosely structured adult imagination game. You know, the rules are there to help give you guidance, but in our case, I mean, we're playing sort of a homebrew story, so if we don't want the rules to be especially as written in the book, we can decide to change them. And as long as it's fair, I mean, sometimes that happens, but you have a lot of freedom within the structure of D&D to adapt it to the story you want to tell.
Yeah, so that's basically my job, is adapting the rules in the book to fit sort of the storyline that we're doing, and them as players come up with creative ways to problem solve or do something, and they roll a dice to see what the outcome is, and I tell them how it succeeds, it fails, it does something in between, something like that. So in order to first like really start playing D&D, everyone's got to build a character. And I sat down with each one of the players, and we all built their characters individually. And D&D is so awesome because you can customize your character in a billion different ways, and hopefully no two characters are ever going to be the same. Especially
stats-wise, you mean?
Well, no, stats-wise, players can be the same, but how? Yeah, your character, your personality, the things that your character likes to do, which also, because it's a fantasy world and it's D&D, it's literally anything that you can think of as long as the DM says okay.
It's like the best choose-your-own-adventure story.
Yeah, and I think it's important to mention we also all wrote backstories for our characters before we started playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I don't know if you want to talk more about that.
The first thing that happened was Matt wrote out what the world was like. He created this entire world that we were going to be a part of, and then we created our characters based off of how we would fit into this world.
Yeah, I basically gave them all a skeleton of the world. Basically, you know, this is what the political factions are, this is how the religion is, and this is the world map and the town that you're from. Or, well, really, they got to choose the town that they're from.
It was a big map.
Yeah, it was a very big map. And then basically, this is a collaborative storytelling. So as people were writing their backstories, they're like, oh, hey, can I do this sort of thing? Or what if this sort of happens? And I incorporate that into the world. So you'll see each individual character, their backstories are drastically different from each other. And it wasn't because of me. It was because of their own thoughts and how they perceived my world and how they thought of their character fitting into the world. And if you want to know a lot more about these backstories, in our Patreon, we're going to release episode zeros of everybody's sort of before they meet in the campaign, which goes over details of each one of their backstories in a little bit more depth and about their characters. I would recommend listening to probably at least 5 episodes before listening to those episode zeros, because those episode zeros are going to throw in some spoilers pretty quickly.
I thought those were just for us to practice the mechanics. I didn't realize those were going to be released.
Dun, dun, dun.
The truth comes out.
Don't worry. Yours is great, actually.
You'll get to hear how much we've improved in the audio quality and recording quality that we've gotten to explore in the last number of episodes we've done. When we are creating our characters, it's not like we're just given kind of free rein to mold whatever we want out of the game. There are some sort of components that, you know, we kind of have to rely on chance, because one of the core mechanics of making a character in D&D is that you have to roll dice to sort of create the stats, the ability scores that your character has. There are certain things that you can choose that then affect what your ability scores are, like what your character's race is. You know, certain races are going to have an advantage to, like, intelligence or to their dexterity if they're a lithe elf. But those choices will affect what your final ability scores are, and then that might, you know, dictate how strong of a character you are. And so that also sort of creates a... you know, a reason why, you know, you might decide to make a cleric over a fighter.
Along with talking about character creation and stats, we'll go over the stats in a second, but this is one homebrew mechanic that we sort of threw in. Is a lot of systems nowadays, they have you do this point buy system where you have like a pool of points and you put them into your stats. We threw that out. So instead, we rolled a bunch of dice for each individual stat. And then you got to sort of like maneuver those stats around in order to make them where you wanted them. So it, even if you like really, really wanted to play a fighter and let's say you didn't roll the way that you wanted to, we still allowed you to move those stats around in order to make it a playable character.
Which was very kind of you.
Yeah, I had to move mine around for the opposite reason because someone didn't want someone to have a dex of 22.
Yeah.
Why not?
Anyways, so we've been throwing out these things called strength, dex, intelligence. Let's go ahead and talk about those. There are six stats for every single character, and this sort of is your physical aspects and your mental aspects, and D&D sort of makes it out into these things called abilities, and you get a score for each one. So this is what our dice rolling was for each one of these things. So the first one is strength. And I mean, that's just sort of your physical lifting poundage amount, how hard you can punch something.
How much weight you can lift. Like grab something away from someone.
Mm-hmm. These stats also affect what later are your abilities. So strength mm-hmm. would determine how good you would be at an athletics skills check. So
or
anything
swimming.
Deemed athletic, yeah, like swimming or climbing or, you know, saying that you want to throw a piece of furniture into someone, you know, that could be deemed athletic, or it might just be an attack. It depends, but essentially,
depends
that
on why you're
strength
throwing
stat,
a piece of furniture.
The higher an ability score is, the greater your ability modifier is. And so, like, if you have a high strength, it might mean that if you were trying to do say, swim across a moving river, and you rolled your athletics skill to see how successful you were in that, if your strength is high, you then add to that raw dice roll. So it makes it more likely that you do something difficult because you're getting a bonus to that action.
Yeah, and how I think about these ability scores is if we're talking about like outside of game, just like a normal, general, run-of-the-mill human being, all of their stats would be 10. 10 is sort of baseline. If you go under 10, you're basically weaker than the normal person or way stronger or whatever than the normal person. So
don't judge my 4.
If you start at 10, you're basically at a plus 0 to affect things in like your skills, which we'll go over later. But every time that you get 2 points higher than 10 or 2 points lower than 10, you either go plus 1 or minus 1. And you can go all the way up to having a 20 strength or 20 in anything. There are ways of getting it farther, but that's, you know, getting to a lot more complicated stuff.
Let's start with the basics.
Items and things like that.
Yeah, we're just doing the basics here.
And one thing that I remember from the player's handbook is it sort of describes that, you know, say you have a strength of 20, that's like a godly level of strength. It's mm-hmm. very unlikely that any normal person would be close to that. So if you sort of have this expectation of like, I'm going to max out all my stats, like it's really unlikely as a character that you could ever get there unless specific scenarios are brought into the campaign. So
yeah, if you think about those like heavy lifting weightlifters that pull fire trucks and flip giant tires and stuff like that, their strength is like 16 as like a number as far as D&D terms. 16 is really good because 16 is a plus 3 to your ability score or whatever, but it can still go much higher. And obviously we're working in the bounds of fantasy where pretty much anything can happen. So,
and there's certain races that, you know, could be naturally stronger and could have that higher score.
So a race that comes up later in this campaign is something called a Goliath. And a Goliath is, man, what?
Like a giant?
It's like a giant, smaller giant. Yeah, it's like a giant and a human sort of cross. And they're built to have extremely strong muscles, really large. They're like, you know, 7 feet tall, giant pecs and six packs. And
basically only pecs and six packs.
That's what they're built.
They have multiple six packs.
Yeah, they have multiple six packs.
And yeah, that strength is a core attribute, but you can think of like, well, strength is useful in pretty much any situation, but the fun of D&D is that if you don't have that high stat, like there are other ways you can look at, you know, how am I going to solve this problem? You know, if the easy solution is to do it with strength, well, you know, you might be able to find an alternative way of getting, you know, accomplishing your task or getting your reward, which can vary so much depending on the group and also what you decide to do.
All right. So dexterity is basically how agile you are. It's going to be how good you are with your hands when you can catch things or if you want to try to do some acrobatics checks. So if you ever hear about, like, I want to tumble, that's going to be a dex-based thing. It can be how fast you are, and it can be how good you are at dodging things, and it can be how good you are at making sure you hit just the right spot on things. You're able to make sure that your hands are moving in a very, well, dexterous fashion. It's also really good for if you want to do hide checks.
Yes.
I don't know anything about that.
No, bonus action hide. Never. That never happens.
So yeah, it's all about how you're going to be moving more nimbly.
Constitution is pretty simple. It's essentially how it affects how much health your character has. So your constitution is sort of like how resilient is your body to, say, like foreign influence like poison, or say how much endurance you have as a character. So constitution, when you're making a character, has the benefit of applying the skill bonus, if you have one, to your health. Each time you level up, as your health increases, you add that bonus to it. So it's a great attribute if you're, you know, the type of character that wants to have a thick skin and, you know, not go down in a fight. But in some cases, it's a less necessary skill if you don't plan to get hit by things. So
that's what dex for.
Yeah.
And yeah, con can also be used for silly things, like to see if your character is going to get drunk, or if you wanted to finish a plate of food or a feast of food that's in front of you. That's just, it's me basically wanting to figure out if your character can handle sort of the intoxication or the amount of food, because con is sort of your, like, core.
It's like endurance kind of thing, because like, you also use it endurance for, like, if you're going to be staying up all night, you have to roll con checks to be sure you're not going to be suffering penalties.
Which built into the fantasy setting in the way of spells. So if somebody casts a really intense spell on you, or if you're like getting poisoned by something, you might have to make a constitution check to determine if you, you know, suffer the effects of that poison or that spell.
Or if you're able to, shrug it off because you're just that badass.
Intelligence is a pretty straightforward attribute. I mean, it's how smart you are. It affects a number of skills. So if you're sort of a studious type of character, it's going to determine how, you know, good you are at remembering a historical event, or how good you might be at casting a spell, or recognizing a spell someone else is casting. So it essentially just determines your intellect, which it's sort of different from the next attribute, which is wisdom.
Intellect is basically like book smarts, whereas wisdom is sort of like
common sense.
Yeah, common sense and how wise a person is. Wisdom and charisma are a little bit of the harder stats to really think about, because, again, we've already explained sort of the physical stats, and intelligence, wisdom, charisma are all the mental stats. Wisdom is just sort of your,
like, understanding of the world?
Understanding of the world, but as far as, like, street smarts. And just sort of like, you sort of know the like way intuitive. That things, and you're intuitive that way. And that's sort of like wisdom for me.
Building on that, it also affects how perceptive your character is. And so that's an important thing too in D&D, because situationally, you know, if something's trying to sneak up on you, if you're more, if your wisdom score is higher, you're more likely to, you know, catch a detail or notice something that would otherwise slip past you. So awareness comes into wisdom quite a bit.
Yeah, it's also very good for like insight checks and whatnot for reading people. Charisma is basically how good you are at talking to people and making them do what you want them to do, and how personable you are. And you are able to just kind of interact with everybody and just get along, make yourself at home in any situation. So if you want to sneak into an area, you could use dex to just, you know, disappear and sneak in, or you could use charisma to make it seem like you obviously belong there.
You can also use the charisma for like intimidating people or lying to people too.
Yes.
So it has like two sides of it.
Yeah, it also has that aspect.
Yeah, charisma is basically just like you're an actor and you're on stage and you want things to go a certain way because how you hold yourself or how you want to deceive somebody. And if you want a lot more description on stats or even classes, I would go check out Critical Role. They have this thing called Handbooker Helper.
You said Handbooker.
Handbooker, like the handbook, and Hamburger Helper mixed together. And they do really short videos. They're like 2 to 3 minutes, and they each hit on one of these topics.
There's also other YouTube videos that explain rules and stuff pretty well.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, like D20 Modern, they have a website that really like just explains things pretty well.
Yeah.
There's also the Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition Player's Handbook, which is only 316 pages of information. So if you'd rather see it distilled into the opinions and experiences of other people, there's so many options. But the book's also pretty cool. It just takes
it's got really pretty artwork.
It does, yeah. And they're definitely getting better with the artwork and stuff as well. Their original artwork had some very, let's say like white male-centered imagery.
Yeah, like 80s fantasy tropes.
Nowadays,
very directed towards one audience.
Yeah, nowadays it's changing. It's not like women in bikini armor. It's a bunch of other much cooler things.
She wears bikini mail with a broadsword.
Yeah. I think,
don't knock broadswords.
Like the new book, Guildmaster's Guide to Ravnica, has a woman of color who looks pretty fucking awesome on it. And that was published in November 2018. We also use dice in this game because it determines our outcome. And I'll tell somebody to roll like 1d20 or 2d6. And like that. And this is, it's basically shorthand for saying, please roll one 20-sided die or 2 6-sided dice. And basically, the dice are used in a lot of parts of this game. I will typically ask somebody to give me a certain check, or if somebody wants to do an attack roll, they have to roll a dice for that outcome. So in order to perform a specific like skill check, or to say, I want to roll an attack versus somebody, that's all has to do with D20. D20 is, what do I want to say? D20 is like the core die that you use.
Yeah, it's used basically for most of the actions and attacks or spells. Anytime you're trying to hit something or try to do something, it's basically a D20. Mm-hmm. And the way we look at a D22 is that, you know, you have that range of 1 to 20 on the die. So a 1 is considered a fumble. It's the lowest score. So it's like an automatic failure if it's a skill check or if you're attacking something. In our case, we consider it a critical fumble, which has additional consequences.
Critical fail.
But if you roll a 20, it has, you know, a bonus if you're trying to hit somebody. You know, you might deal more damage. Or in our case, we also have a critical table that we roll on that Matt can go into in more detail. But D20s are basically really used, or they're used probably the most frequently. Other dice are often reserved towards things like damage, or if you're rolling your hit points when you level up, you might roll a certain die and add that total to how much you currently have.
Every character during a combat situation, when they attack and they're doing sort of a damage-oriented thing, whether it's a spell or if it's a sword or a shield or anything like that.
Captain America, this shit.
Yeah. They have a specific die that's associated to that damage, and sometimes it's multiple numbers of that damage. And yeah, and as far as rolling a 1 or a 20 when you're either doing a skill check or even an attack, 1 means automatic failure, and a 20 means automatic success. No matter what the DC, and DC is like a difficulty challenge or difficulty rating that I would set. As far as our homebrew mechanics in this aspect, I have a critical hit table and basically a critical fumble table. And players will roll these things called percentile dice, which is also just a term for dice. It is 2d10 that basically allows them to give me a percentage from 0 to 100, or I guess it's 1 to 100 because 0 is actually 100 on these dice. And I have this big giant Excel sheet that tells me with that specific number, a tiny little outcome or a little flare or something that'll happen along with that attack. These critical hit tables and fumble tables only happen when there is a, during a combat situation, when there's an attack happening.
See episode 2 for a very interesting critical fumble.
Yeah. And a critical hit as well. Well, it's not very interesting, but it still happens.
Yeah, I mean, but it sort of creates this flavor that is changing the outcome of the situation, because you could critically fumble and instead of, you know, hitting your target, maybe you hit yourself or you hit the person next to you or you throw your weapon across the room, because those things can happen. And it sort of creates that level of detail that, you know, throws a wild card into the mix.
I think one of my favorite critical failures was when I rolled in that 1 on a research check and got massively bad information, but I was so insistent that it was correct that people forgot that I got the information off of a nat 1.
And that's also something that's really awesome about D&D 2, which is up to sort of like the players and the D&D. Is the players...
The DM.
Sorry, did I say D&D? Uh-huh. Yeah, the DM. By the way, DM means Dungeon Master, is your player in the game, the fantasy game, doesn't actually know what you're rolling as far as dice. So if, you know, I asked Jen to do a deception check and she rolls a 1, her character still thinks that she's doing the best that she can do at a deception and is not automatically failing. So it's great. I think it's really awesome when the characters still roleplay as if they're, you know, trying to do the thing that they're doing, but it's not going really well or whatever. And while we're on the topic of combat, we're not going to go into the extreme nitty gritty of combat because there's so many options and so many things that can happen during a combat. But basically, every player character to start off a combat rolls this thing called initiative. And you can think about initiative as basically how fast they are to react in the situation that's happening. So they'll...
Dex!
Yeah, they'll roll a d20, add their dex modifier to it, and then we list off basically the highest to lowest in order who goes first to last, and the monsters, which I will control, are also within that initiative somewhere. And as far as when it is your turn during combat, typically you get action, you get movement, and you get a bonus action.
You can do them in any order, right?
You can do them in any order.
There's also a reaction.
There's also a reaction, but it's not on your turn. That's on someone else's turn. And these are the core three things that you can do on your turn. There are other things like spells or other feats or just things within a player character that will allow you to do more things. You'll see more of that in episode 2 as well. Let's explain movement. Movement is basically how far you can move within your one turn. So every character has an associated speed. Typically, it's around 30. And you're like, what does 30 mean? 30 means 30 feet.
And it's based on your race, usually. Like, if you're a very, very small being, like a gnome or something, you probably have less speed than, like, a Goliath. And also based on your class. So, like, a monk would have a higher speed than... something slower. I don't know. What's a class that's really slow? I don't know.
Fighters. Yeah, fighters
clerics,
don't get any.
Probably.
Yeah, clerics too. Wizards. And basically, This means for your movement part of your turn, you can move 30 feet within the round.
You can also choose to exchange your standard action for an additional movement.
Correct. And so basically, action allows you to attack a being, cast a spell, which can include an attack spell or a healing spell or a buff spell, or you can use that action to double your speed. So basically move 60 feet in the round instead.
Or do something like pick up an item or like take something like a health potion out and feed it to somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then bonus action is basically just class base. Basically every class, I think, has an action that they can perform during their bonus action, which really is just sort of like a minor action. It's some bonus actions allowed you to do an ability score like hide or cast a cantrip type of spell, or some spells at higher level can be cast as a bonus action. So that way you still have your normal action to do something else. While we're still on combat, I also wanted to talk about AC or armor class. So armor class is literally the armor that you're wearing. And what goes into that is the plate mail or chain mail that you're wearing, or leather studded armor, plus your dexterity modifier. And So you could basically have a character that's not really wearing any armor, but just has really high dex. So you can dodge your way out of all the attacks, or you can play a character with really low dex and just have really heavy armor that, you know, weighs you down a bit. But when somebody hits you, it's just like, bing, and it like comes off. So the higher your AC, the better you are at either dodging the attacks or just glancing the blows off you and not taking any damage. And basically when somebody attacks versus you, they basically have to get a number that is higher than your AC. Basically, I'll roll a die and I'll say, okay, they got a 16. Kit, what was your armor class again? And then he 17. Spouts out a number. Right. And then...
Oh, wait, it's 18 because I have my shield.
Nice. Yeah. So always then that attack missed because his AC is higher than my attack. Say his AC was 16, though, we both tie, but tie always goes to the attacker. So then the attack would still hit. Yeah, and spells will... There's attack spells which also go off of AC, but sometimes spells have like sort of an AoE effect. And the character... AoE is area of effect, which means the character will... A different character or a monster will have to roll basically like a dexterity check to get out of the way of the area of effect, or they'll have to do some other thing which is specified in each individual spell. As far as spells, we've kept bringing this up. Cantrips are basically like your level zero spells. They're spells that are memorized in your player's head. They're things that they use all the time just for like tiny little actions. Each one of these cantrip spells are simple and just sort of like a street musician type of thing, or just like cleaning up a little mess, or moving a glass towards you.
Yeah, the reality of them is you can cast them as many times a day as you want, versus higher level spells. If you're a lower level wizard, you might only be able to cast one level one spell per day, or two perhaps. So cantrips are seen as something that you don't exert a lot of power to cast them.
Yeah, and then...
I love cantrips.
As your character levels up, your spellcasting character levels up, you get access to more higher powered spells, and these spells basically have categories which they're based into each one of these levels. Level one spells are just sort of the, you know, you're setting out as a low level adventurer and these are sort of the things that you need to survive or do damage or whatever. So things like mage armor and casting a firebolt or casting just a heal on somebody.
Magic missile!
Or magic missile. Those are the pretty common level one spells there are. And then the higher up, the higher order it is, the more complicated the spell can get and more damage output it can have, or the more random effects it will have as well. We'll also bring up this term called HP, which is hit points. And you can think about this like just any video game, is how much health you have. And like con went into this when you were building your character, the higher the con is, the more bonus to maximum amount of health you have. And basically when somebody successfully attacks you, the damage happens and then your maximum health stays the same, but then you become wounded.
Essentially, you take a certain amount of damage, and when you reach that maximum health, or if your health is reduced to zero and you don't have more health points to deduct, you pass out or die.
No, because then we have death saving throws.
But basically, this means whenever you go down to zero hit points, you know, you basically start with like a pool of 30 or something. And when all those 30 hit points are gone, when you get to zero, your character becomes unconscious. They're not dead. And basically,
they pass out.
They're on the ground. They're bleeding out. And every consecutive round after that, when it becomes that player's turn, they need to roll a death saving throw, which is just rolling one d20. There's no bonuses on this roll. And basically, if they get a 10 or above, they succeed. And you have to succeed three times. Or if you fail three times, your character dies, which is really sad. And at this point in time, they don't have a way of... the characters do not have a way of resurrecting. That is a much higher level spell, which hopefully they'll get access to later.
What are you planning on killing us?
You know, there's always the imminent threat. You never know. Gotta make it interesting, you know? And there are other things that, you know, if you're unconscious on the ground, bleeding out, and an enemy attacks you, you automatically fail a death saving throw when that happens.
But you can have a party member do a medicine check to try to stabilize you.
That, or they can even just heal you, and then you pop right back up. Not really pop right back up, but you get your hit points back up.
Some hit points,
depending on how good the heal is. Because they still have to roll a die to see how many hit points they heal you back up.
That's one of the fun things still about playing D&D after so many years, is you can always find a new way of approaching a situation, depending on how flexible the group is. But, you know, every character is a little different. So, you know, not everyone's going to approach, you know, trying to stop the bleeding on their fallen comrade the same way.
Yeah, it's kind of my thing that I always kind of get frustrated a little bit with in video games, when I have to have a rogue in my party to open a, like, chest or a lock or something.
You just can't break the box, you know? You have to be able to pick
exactly. I'm like, I'm a warrior. I should be able to break the box and just lose maybe half the items there. That should be an option. And in D&D, all the options are available.
Just depends on your imagination and what the DM will allow.
Yeah.
How logical it is that it would work, too.
Basically, I would say...
And what you roll, too, I guess.
The sky is the limit, but there are still limitations within my world's bounds, you know? Like gravity. You can't just say, oh, I'm just going to start floating up in the air. Well, are you casting a spell to do that?
Well, not with that attitude.
How are you doing this?
It's all a dream.
So physics still applies.
There are some elements, too, that take D&D as far as like a fantasy game, though, and really turn it upside down. Because there are, I mean, we could go into this in another episode, but a critical component to our campaign is that we have a world with rifts into other dimensions in it. And that means that anything can happen in some cases. I mean, it means there might be a place where the rules of physics don't apply as we expect them to. And that can be a component that comes into a game environment, you know, depending on where the people go. Because you can go to another plane of existence.
The astral plane.
Yeah, we could have an entirely new environment that we're not familiar with.
Yep. The land of milk and honey. Look, there's milk and honey everywhere. You can't move fast.
It's so sticky.
Yeah, like all those things can happen. The moon could be made of cheese.
Yeah.
I mean, it probably is in some of these races.
I would eat it.
Of course, Fanula.
I would spend the whole time trying to eat the moon, and I would disrupt your whole plot. That's a forewarning if you make a moon made out of cheese.
Do I have to remind you that you're lactose intolerant?
Okay, but Fanula isn't. Fanula's going to eat all the cheese.
Which is also something that's great about D&D. Your character can be completely different than you.
just like how we went down that, you know, tangent, that happens a lot in D&D too, because guess what? Things are really interesting and we come into really interesting scenarios, or people have anecdotes and stories, or just everyone brings something unique to the table in a way, even though we're all not at a table.
Yeah, and on that note too, we have 6 players, so this can sometimes happen a lot because we have basically 7 different brains working all at once, and everybody pipes in with like a different solution and a different answer or a different quip, which leads us down a completely different trail, which
happens a lot.
Takes a lot of effort on my part, because I like to have this world as sort of an open sandbox, but I still kind of have to lay the groundwork before them wherever they're going. So spoiler alerts, I haven't created 100% of the worlds because I can't do that. but I do sort of think ahead of what they're doing, or, you know, they'll throw me a curveball.
Like anything Fanula does.
Sure.
Like berating a shopkeeper.
Yeah, and I'll have to basically improv the situation as it happens. So, but I mean, that's the wonders of D&D.
Yep, and Matt seems to enjoy wearing many hats at once, even if he has to be multiple people in the same story.
Even if he has to name them all,
and
John.
Please forgive him when he has to try to remember what voice he's doing.
Yeah. There is a few races. When we say races, we mean the species of the character, whether it's an NPC or a player.
Did you explain what NPC was?
Oh, sorry. God, there's so many things.
Non-player character.
Yeah, NPC stands for non-player character, which is all the characters controlled by me, the DM.
So not anything like,
which is why he has to have a bunch of different voices.
And as far as D&D races go, it's very like, it's easy to imagine like the Lord of the Rings, because you have elves and dwarves and halflings, hobbits, all of that exists in D&D as well. We have, you know, monstrous races like orcs and dragons and stuff, but usually players aren't those types of monsters, you know. We're generally humans, elves, dwarves, halflings, half-orcs.
Those are the basics.
Yeah.
Though Matt did open up a bunch of the more obscure ones.
Yeah, he
when I looked at his list, it was really, really long.
Yeah, so as far as the list of races in my game, I have taken everything that is current to now in sort of D&D of playable races. That would be including things like Eberron. I know most of you don't understand what that means, but it is a module in...
like an expansion pack.
Yeah, an expansion pack for D&D. So eventually you'll see these like weird, crazy things that'll come up later on. But I just wanted to throw out a few ones that happened in the very first episode that I completely bypass and don't even explain. And I would like to do that now for you.
Yay!
So I say this word Kenku. Kenku is basically a bird person.
And they're adorable!
Covered in feathers. They have a large beak, big, large eyes. They're relatively small. They only go up to 3 feet to 4 feet tall. They can typically fly. And when they talk, they sort of sound like a bird, where they're, I can't even do it right now, where they're like super nasally, and you'll hear me do that. And
there's sort of noise going on.
Yeah.
Like what a parrot would sound when it's imitating people.
Yeah.
Yeah, Matt gave us a lot of flexibility with our backstories and races and stuff like that, so...
And classes,
if too. You're listening to this and you know every rule of D&D, you will probably... be surprised still about certain races and classes that people have in this campaign.
Yeah, hopefully that explains enough of the basics and it doesn't scare you away from D&D. Basically, anytime that I've brought somebody new into D&D, and this even happened the first time that I played D&D a long, long, long time ago, is I just got hooked like immediately because of just sort of the openness and the... you know, creativity that can happen. And hopefully, if you're not already in a D&D group and you would love to start playing a D&D group, just pick up a book, have some of your closest friends together, and start playing.
You could even find a group like at your local game shop or online. There's a lot of resources if you don't have friends that want to play with D&D with you.
Yeah, a lot of game shops will have those, I want to start a D&D game, are you interested? And then give you, like, a sign-up sheet.
Mm-hmm. Then you can make new friends.
Totally. And there's a lot of role-playing games out there, not just D&D 5th edition. That's what we are doing. But there's so many different things out there. You'll hear things like Pathfinder, Simbarum.
I really like 13th Age. It kind of takes out the math.
Ooh, I don't like
that. Which is a weird thing for me because I love math.
If you want to add like 10 times as much math, there's more complicated games. Like Pathfinder has a lot of variables that change depending on what you're doing or who you are. So it adds even more to the game. There's also variations of D20 systems that, you know, are similar sort of concept where you're telling a story and using dice to decide how things play out. But there's games like Shadowrun that use like a lot more six-sided dice and just endless variety.
Whatever you're interested in, there's options.
And there's also people out there to play it with you. Even if you can't do it in person, there's a lot of groups online.
Yeah, and our entire group is over the internet because we only have a few people that are playing and that are in the same place.
Yeah, because we are in 4 different states, which is crazy to think about.
I'm thinking about moon cheese and I'm really hungry.
Go eat some space cheese.
Some non-dairy space cheese.